B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. My barber's still in Vietnam. I'm hoping he's back
I
later
got you,
this
dog.
Week.
I take care of you. I get you right.
Anytime you hear Backstreet Boys and it's high noon in the District of Columbia, means Mitch Tischler's on the phone. What up, Mitchell? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You trust B. Mitch to cut your hair over there?
I am not.
Oh, man, look, I guarantee you it'll look better than it ever did for him.
I don't believe you, but I appreciate
if you're going to do it, you got to do it on the live stream.
No, we're not going to do it. I want to be clear about
do it, though.
I think Brian is back Wednesday. So ideally, I'll have a fresh cut before Sunday night's game, which I think we might have an hour-long pregame show on NBC4, which will be pretty cool.
Have fun.
Mitchell, you posted a number of cakes on your Instagram feed. We're aware that your mom, Mama Tischler, is quite the cake maker. Are you bringing any cake to Ashburn for Brian and I, considering it's still his birthday? It's Leo season.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bring some cake for Bemis. Not a problem.
Boom. People helping people.
Done. Yeah. He said he'll bring it for me.
Listen, Mama Tischler loves making these cakes, and she's happy to share the wealth.
Well, let's make sure you share the wealth then and not just bring cake for B.
Yeah, just bring it for me.
What about Kerwin? Kerwin's getting lunch.
Me and Kerwin.
What about me?
We're not worried about you.
What about
the
Dan
whole
Quinn?
Kit and caboodle.
Oh, Dan don't need none.
Dan Quinn's the reason we're all coming out here.
All of us cake.
Because this all could have been done on Zoom.
Yeah, he could be buying all of us cake.
All right, big man. We were all at the practice in Miami. We were all at the game in Miami. What really stood out for you? Let's start somewhere else, for goodness sakes. Non-Jaden Daniels division. Give me something else.
All right, because I certainly have some feelings on all your guys' discussion about him running, but we can get to that. Listen, to me, I think the thing that you have to be most excited about was seeing what could be your starting offensive line out there playing together both on Thursday and then on Saturday. Jaden Daniels hasn't been pressured in the preseason yet, and they look pretty good against that Dolphins front, especially the interior of that O-line. They're going to have to clean up some of the penalties and some of the procedural stuff that's been happening. I believe that as they get more used to the Jaden Daniels cadence and they all kind of work together a little bit more, that'll all kind of work its way out. But certainly it's something to keep an eye out because it's been multiple times during camp and then also during the preseason game. So you've had guys jump offside.
Andrew Wiley.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Andrew Wiley had two penalties on one drive. Andrew Wiley last year, over the course of, I want to say, 16 games, maybe it wasn't that many, had four accepted penalties all season. I think that's an aberration. I think it's a guy that hadn't played much, kind of just getting back up to speed. What do you make of two penalties on one drive for Wiley?
He has to get better.
Yeah.
He's too old to be doing it. I mean, to be honest, he is too far along in his career to be still making those bonehead mistakes.
I don't disagree, B. It's unacceptable if this was the regular season. We'd be going crazy about it. Being that it's a preseason game and the amount of time that he's been on the field, yeah, he's a vet and he shouldn't be making those mistakes, but he did. But his body of work last year shows that he's not a particularly penalty-prone player. And try saying that three times fast. And I don't think the one poor game against the Dolphins changes that, what we've seen, you know, as a body of work over his career.
Yeah, I think it's not acceptable, clearly, but I don't think it's going to continue. You know what I mean? We just got a text from Kerwin checking in on Cakegate. He thinks any cake your mom makes for B. Mitch should be in the shape of a Hall of Fame head bust. So that cake,
big ass cake,
that's a big cake, man. They might not have enough bronze.
I mean, that's a big cake. That's a dome over there to try and make any cake. To be fair, I'm not offering my mom up to make another new cake. We'll bring pieces of what's left over from yesterday.
That's fine, but she could also make a new one. Should she be listening and choose to want to make a cake? Cool. You were, I think, early to this. I want to give you credit. Samerstill being the best corner they got. What have you thought of Mikey Samerstill, the Michigan Wolverine?
Yeah, I mean, it's just been really impressive watching him. Not just the fact that he's a rookie, but almost any player. He's super quick to get to the ball, which, and you love that. You love that fieriness out of him that he's kind of always wanting to stick his nose in there and get it. But he also does a really good job of staying at home. And particularly that Dolphins offense uses a lot of, you know, candy in the backfield, a lot of movement, a lot of, you know, fake movement and whatnot. And throughout the joint practice and then showed up again in the game, he just does a really good job of being, it's almost, you know, being confident that he knows where he's supposed to be and what he's supposed to be doing. And he doesn't bite on, you know, all the fake stuff happening out there. And during the joint practice, you know, I think you talked a lot about the play where he broke up the ball to Tyreek Hill in the end zone, but he had two other plays. One was a reverse that got ran at him. He tackled Johnny Smith, I think, for a tackle in the backfield. This is Thursday during the joint practice. And then another one where Tyreek ran kind of a fake reverse and kind of came back out and was looking for the ball in the flat. And Sainer still was right there and forced Tua to throw the ball elsewhere. And it was an incomplete play. And it's a headiness that you don't necessarily see out of young players, but you don't necessarily see it out of young players, particularly in training camp when they're trying to go out there and make big plays. And it's been really impressive watching him understand this defense and understand what he's supposed to be doing.
He's been a breath of fresh air because when you talk to veteran players about rookies normally, you know, they may have a couple things to say about him. But these guys go into depth about what this guy does, how he thinks, and his mindset. Then I sat there and I watched him at the hotel. Just like I said when we went to that that little garden build that day, the way they were with him, it was veteran players coming up to him as, like, you know, when you see the mafia dealing with the boss, that's how people deal with him.
I thought
that says a lot.
At the Miami game, you know how special teams players come out on the field first once they're fully dressed in uniform? Like the 2-hour pregame warm-ups are kind of like individuals do what they want. Maybe they work with a coach, but then eventually you come out in position groups. And what's tricky with the special teams is they come out first, and then a lot of times guys have to go back in to come out with the defense or the offense or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Samerstiel, in only his second preseason game, led out the special teams group. And I just... It's just one of these things, man. He just continues to be impressive.
He's always doing a little bit more than is expected of him. And if he's doing that, putting himself out there like that, he has to be doing everything behind the scenes just so he would be, because nobody can put themselves out there if they're not ready for it.
I agree. But, Mitch, we haven't, because we've been kind of Jaden-focused this morning, shocker, we haven't talked a lot. The starting defense got shredded. Whatever version of the starting defense that was, I mean, the Dolphins had one drive, went right down the field, converted two fourth down conversions. The touchdown to River Craycraft was pretty easy, frankly. What level of concern do you have watching that drive?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think these corners are going to continue to be place of concern for me, and you know, honestly, probably more than the offensive tackles or any other position on this defense, mostly, or on this team, mostly because we have seen how much you know, this coaching staff likes to leave corners in, you know, one-on-one situations on the outside, and we've seen it two straight weeks, last week, or, you know, this week with Benjamin St. Juice, and 2 weeks ago with Emmanuel Forbes in the end zone getting beat over the top. It's not great, but I do think that some of the Dolphins' ability to run, especially those fourth down plays that were kind of up the middle, would look a little bit different if John Allen and Daron Payne were out there clogging the middle and playing. I think also getting Bobby Wagner out there a little bit more, you know, would help in the run game particularly as well. So yeah, there's certainly some concern, and watching, you know, Tua go down the field 5 for 5 and score a touchdown doesn't do a lot to alleviate that concern. But I think this run defense will be just fine. Will be better. Will be fine. I'm really concerned about what's happening at corner because, you know, between BSJ, Emmanuel Forbes, and Michael Davis, I don't know that I really feel great about any pair of those three being out there and being on an island against kind of, you know, big-time NFL receivers, not even River Craycraft.
I think we got to get more pressure from the up front, too. I don't think we could just blame it solely on the cornerbacks because there's pockets that don't get any pressure. Quarterback gets no pressure. They have pockets they could just step up into and stand there all day. The pass rush has to get better for those corners to even think about getting better.
Well, B, to that point, we're talking with our friend Mitch Tischler here from the Beltway Football Podcast. You can follow him at Mitch_Tischler. Are you a little – as much as we've talked about Jaden and whether he should play or not, right? Mm-hmm. Are you a little surprised that John and Duran didn't play at all?
Yeah, I am. Because, see, this is the thing about it. I understand people get passes because they've been around, they've done it before. But the people you're going to be playing against, they're getting experience, they're playing. So how long will it take you to get up to speed to those guys that have been playing for other teams that we've been going against? And I don't look at what we do on our team solely. I look at around the league. If the people around the league are playing their veteran guys, they're getting a little farther along. When we come up, yes, our guys in shape, but these other guys in shape too. I know we're not crazy enough to assume that, oh, our guys just in that great shape. They don't have to ready. They'll be ready for them. The other guys on the other teams are getting ready, so you have to see that it's going to be a growth gap in between it.
Well, and like,
so that's a problem to me.
I didn't expect Ertz or Wagner to play this preseason, barring those guys playing Sunday. That will prove to be correct. Mm-hmm. Those guys have also done it for 13, 14 years. You know what I mean? I'm not sure it was the right or wrong decision, but I am a little surprised we haven't seen Allen or Payne at all. Mitch, were you surprised?
Yeah, I don't really agree as much with B-Mitch there that they have to play to get up to speed. Certainly, you know, I would have liked, you guys know how I feel about the preseason. I want these guys to be playing. I was, you know, yelling about Jaden needing to get some preseason work, considering the talk before that was that he might not do it. But, you know, for some of these veteran guys, I don't think it's the end of the world that they're not getting that work. I do think it gives the coaches a little bit more of an opportunity to judge, you know, some of these, you know, second and third team guys who are fighting for roster spots. And the earlier they get in the game, ostensibly the better competition they're playing against. So you get a better chance to kind of figure out if John Ridgeway and Fedarian Mathis, how they work against the other teams, you know, ones and or twos. And I think, you know, some of these positions that they're a little bit deeper in, I want to see a little bit more from these guys. You kind of know what you're going to, these coaches feel confident they know what they're going to get from Zach Ertz. So I think seeing Cole Turner out on the field a little bit more gives you a little bit more of an opportunity to evaluate him and figure out whether he can help out in the back end. So I don't think it hasn't bothered me too much that John and Duran didn't play, and I don't think it'll hinder him too much when we get to the season.
But see, this is the thing, Mitch. If you're comparing John and Duran, if they're starting a race against professionals and they're not practicing or playing, those other people are getting ahead of them. I understand. We see they are the best on this team. But we didn't get a lot of pressure up the middle or on the outside last year. So it's not like you could tell me they don't need to work. So they need to work just like everybody else. So when we get into the game against Tampa, if we can't get pressure up the middle, then we're going to have Baker Mayfield looking damn good.
I totally agree with you. The other point that I would make about all of this is the absurdity of what the preseason has become and the timing. They just played their second preseason game, you know, on Saturday, August 17th, and their first game of the season is September 8th, I believe. We're talking about three weeks in between games here for guys who are going to be, who would have been playing. And so I think getting John and Duran in for a half dozen plays a month before the opener, when they're not going to play between now and then anyway, makes a big difference. No, I don't think it makes a massive difference.
It's going to be interesting kind of watching this all unfold. I don't know that we know exact. I think, considering how much they overhauled this roster in March, April, May, and then, frankly, to me, they've had a lot of guys in and out just in the last month of training camp. I think next week, roster cuts come Tuesday. I think the team by Friday afternoon could still have four or five changes, like as guys get released from other rosters.
So they're looking for guys off of other teams that have impressed, And those guys off the other team that have impressed, guess what they're doing? Playing.
Yeah. I think there was a fair amount of they wanted to see, like, probably their bottom 10 roster guys. Coming into camp, they had an idea who was kind of on the bubble, and now they've been able to watch them. And you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot more could change. Big man, what do you make of this kicker situation?
I mean, the kicker situation is abysmal. And we've joked about being in the quarterback abyss for years. We're certainly in the kicker abyss. And Riley Patterson ain't the guy. He obviously had a better practice on Thursday, hit a couple deep field goals. But you step out on the field when it's time to play, and you can't make, you know, kind of basic NFL field goals. You don't have a spot on this roster. And so, like you said, looking at teams when they start making cuts elsewhere, the Commanders have to be right at the top of the list of teams that are looking for a new kicker.
I think the team we playing this week got two of them, so we'll see.
There's a lot of teams that have two of them, and I think that's okay. You were actually pretty early on thinking Jamin had a real chance as a pass rusher, had the strip sack, and you could tell that Dan Quinn afterwards was legitimately, like, happy for him, excited for him,
yeah,
to make a play and kind of get on the radar. What do you think of Jamin going forward at this point?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I liked last week against the Jets, or 2 weeks ago against the Jets, he made some plays early in the run game, was relatively quiet in the pass game. This week we saw him make a couple plays in the pass game, which was nice. And I liked early on he had the pass breakup, but what I liked most was later in the game was when he got that strip sack. And, you know, you want to see guys make an impact against players who are either on a practice squad or going to be playing in the USFL next year. And the fact that Jamin was able to get out there and make a couple moves was nice. And listen, I think, you know, you can foresee a world with him and Dante Fowler on the field at the same time, just two guys with extreme speed for, you know, D linemen / pass rushers, we'll call them, who will give some teams some troubles. And certainly, you know, when you look at this kind of big picture group of pass rushers, I think you're going to see a lot of rotation on obvious passing downs. And, you know, I like the idea of having guys that can step up and give Dorrance Armstrong or Cleveland Farrell, you know, a little bit of a break in the middle of the game. And as long as Jamin continues to go out there and make plays and get after the QB, he's going to have a spot on this roster.
I think I agree with everything you're saying. I may be the leader of the KJ Henry fan club. I like Henry, works hard. Whenever he gets out there, he generally seems to make a play.
Yeah.
I think he's a part of your, when you said kind of the Farrell, Fowler, Armstrong, like that next wave that comes in. I think he's part of that. Big man, we'll see you soon. I assume we'll see you out here with Cake.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, bro. That's our guy, Mitch Tischler. When we come back, got to audible a little. We got week zero, man. College football is here. We're going to run through the all college football name team, including fellas with first names of Marvelous and Memorable. Nobody go anywhere.
Hey, it's Brian Mitchell here. You heard me talk a lot about FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Well, we have something a little different for you. Now, through September 22nd, all FanDuel customers can get $5 and a 3-week free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Then, with a YouTube TV base plan, you'll be able to watch every regular season game, every regular season Sunday afternoon out-of-market game. All you need is a Google account and a current form of payment, and you can cancel anytime. Just visit FanDuel.com/Brian to download America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official partner of 106.7 The Fan. You have to be 21 years old and present in Virginia. Full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally after free trial. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I mean, when this song first came out, it was like, holy moly, who is this guy? I want to have a conversation about what we've seen from Cliff and Jaden in the preseason, because I don't think it's much, and I think that's all by design. I also want to shout out Chris Kerwin, who just brought the boys Chick-fil-A. Appreciate you, Kerwin. I also want to shout out my cousin, Glasgow John, who's driving around listening to the program. Always good to connect with him. But, B, before we get into all that, it is week zero. Like, look, you know what I'm going to do this weekend? You know what I'm going to do on Saturday?
Watch football.
That, for sure. But bet on football. Dude, real quick, can we have a brief conversation about the unders through the preseason?
No.
B, they have
been winning.
I hope everybody's been betting them, and I know a lot of people have actually been texting me and tweeting me their under bets, putting parlays in, all of it. Preseason unders are 28-6.
Yeah.
I've been betting them pretty good.
They were 12-4 the first.
12-4. I mean, they are on fire. On fire. Maybe later in the week we have a real conversation about if we're going to keep it going, because you never get up from a hot blackjack table, but at the same time, things only stay hot so long.
Then they're not playing a lot of starters in the next game, so it's probably best to go for it.
And I think it's a testament to how bad the quarterbacks are and how bad the O-lines are.
I don't know if it's how bad all of them are. I think it's this. The Miami Dolphins run their offense. They don't run vanilla. Well, vanilla for them is probably a caramel swirl for another team.
Right.
Because they don't – if you watch them in practice and you watch them in the game, they have movement in everything. Their defense, they got double fire blitz right through the middle. They got double edge rushes coming off. They don't give a damn about what you see because they just really – they believe we're faster than you. Other teams go out there and they run the base. They don't run base.
All about that.
And I don't think in the last week many teams are going to play their aggressive stuff with the young people playing.
Definitely not.
So that means that the unders go even better.
All right. So, I mean, I couldn't agree more. To that point, I want to talk about some advanced stats from Cliff and Jaden that I think tell a very specific story. But this weekend, man, we got football. Saturday at noon from Dublin, Florida State against Georgia Tech. The Ramblin' Wreck against the Criminals. I'll be watching, assuming my wife doesn't make me do something else. SMU Nevada. Howard's playing Rutgers. I mean, we got football, dude. North Carolina A&T going to Winston-Salem.
I talked to two guys.
Faced the Demon Deacons.
When we were leaving Wednesday, they were flying for the Florida State game.
To Dublin?
But they were going like a week or so early, and they were going to one part, then they were coming back for the game.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. All right, so I saw this thing right there. There's four games. Florida State, Georgia Tech, Montana State, New Mexico, SMU, Nevada, and Delaware State, Hawaii. Delaware State
is traveling
to Hawaii on Saturday. Natural rivals there.
People really, really know how to get a win. We're going to fly you out here to Hawaii.
Bro, it's kind of Biden versus Obama. all right. Now, to celebrate week zero of college football and the return of college football, one of the absolute most fun sports to watch on the planet, our guy Troy Macker from Bet Rivers Content put out this list. The 2024 college football all-name team.
Wow.
These are just dudes with wild names. Ready for your quarterback, Lamphill? Of course, that would be – what's the Louisiana Monroe mascot?
Northeast Louisiana, I don't know.
Let's find that out.
Some type of Indian or something?
The Warhawks. So my guess is it used to be something else. Mm-hmm. Warhawks doesn't sound like it's been around 100 years.
No, it wasn't.
Your Warhawks starting quarterback, General Booty.
That's the man's real name.
That's the man's real name. At running back from the NC, Hollywood Smothers. Another running back, because you're going to run a two-back set.
Yep.
Boston College Screaming Eagles, Turbo Richard. So you could call him Turbo Dick if you want.
No, we're not going to do that.
I'm just saying you could. At wideout, lining up on the outside, Louisiana Tech, who we think are the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Okay. At wide receiver for Louisiana Tech, Dakoldest Crawford.
He is Dakoldest.
D-E.
What's your name, man? I'm the coldest, dog.
D-E, capital C-O-L-D-E-S-T. I would like Dakoldest beer.
What I'm starting to find out is there are a lot of people that were drinking when they were naming the kids.
Another wideout from Florida Atlantic University, Jet Coolman.
That's weird.
Yo, I saw this. Kids, high school students, if you're out there, look at Florida Atlantic for college. I took my daughters wanted to go to the pier when we were down in Florida over the last couple days. So we went to the Dania Beach Pier, not too far from your hotel. And Florida Atlantic has a campus that is, no lie, on the beach. I don't know if it's their main campus or their peer research campus, but I couldn't believe that was like a college campus. It was a far cry from Route 1 in College Park. I know that.
I'll tell you that.
At tight end, from Florida International, Rocky Beers. O-line, we're going left to right. From SMU, Southern Methodist, you've got King Large. From Georgia Southern, you've got King Triton Samuela.
After you put Rich's name in, I have to say this. The chat says next, he'll have a Blue Chew read.
Nobody gets more free pub than Blue Chew. We haven't done a read in like 2 years. UNLV offensive lineman. I believe this guy is close friends with Mike Beasley. Tiger Shanks.
Oh, that's messed up.
Kennesaw State's, I don't know the mascot. I'm just going to say Bulldog. Dodge Souser. And then from Tulsa, Walter Youngbear. Those are your five offensive linemen. I think the defensive names are even better.
It was a guy this week in the game for Miami. What was his name? It was weird.
River Craycraft? No, caught the first touchdown?
It was worse than Craycraft. I'm going to find it for you.
Are you ready for your first team, all-name team defense?
Let's go with it.
From Rice. What is Rice? The Owls, I believe?
Yeah, the Rice or the Owls.
From Rice, defensive back, Mo Billity.
That's
was
great.
His real name.
Kennesaw State, M-O-H. The Owls, too, by the way.
Okay, shout out to Kennesaw State. M-O-H is his first name. B-I-L-I-T-Y is his last name. Mo Billity. From Georgia Southern, defensive back, Chance Gamble. You think that guy goes for a lot of pick sixes?
Yeah.
From LSU. This might be our first SEC player here. Major Burns. If I play defensive back, I'm not sure I want Burns.
Be your last name.
Nah, man. Or if I was a urologist. Another DB, this time from Western Kentucky, Marvelous Owens. If your name is Marvelous and you go to a bar, do you introduce yourself as Marv or Marvelous?
Marvelous.
You got to lean in at that point, right?
Oh, yeah.
Linebacker from Duke, the Blue Devils, out of Durham, North Carolina, Memorable Factor.
That's a good one.
Now, if you go introduce yourself as Marvelous, what do you do if your name is Memorable?
You got to be memorable. You can't say, hey, my name Mem. Sounds stupid.
Memo. From Charlotte, another line. I'm going to cause some trouble in a moment. Charlotte 49ers, Stone Handy.
You won't be the receiver because when you miss the ball, you call your Stone Hands.
That's true. All right. South Florida is – Central Florida is the Knights, right? South Florida is the Bulls, I believe. I believe I have that correct. Linebacker, Eli Hiscock. H-I-S-C-O-C-K. It's time to talk the baseball. Joining us right now is B. Mitchell Finley official baseball insider, Toby Altizer. Of course, all our baseball coverage on 106.7 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Check out the savings calculator at T-Mobile.com/switch. Toby, what up, man? How are you?
What's going on, dude? I'm a little disappointed that my name isn't a little more unique like the guys in the last segment.
Those guys had some names,
nah,
dog.
Toby, you don't want some of those names, man.
Those young men had some names.
Some of them I want to avoid. Some of them not so bad.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like – now, I know the Nats got one back yesterday, but it kind of seemed like all the Phillies needed to get right was to play a four-game series with the Nats. They went up to Philly and kind of got worked in three out of those four games.
Yeah, it felt like that, JP. It was something where Philly's really been struggling. They faced the Nationals in the first three games of that series. It was kind of dominant. It kind of showed you the state of affairs for this baseball team. I don't think they're you know, super far from contending, but at the same point, you had some youthful mistakes in this series where they're going to have to work out some of those things the rest of this year as they gear up for next season. Like, you had, I think it was Friday night, there was a play in the 10th inning where Jose Tena, who was acquired in the Lane Thomas deal, he's a youngster, he's playing third base, and there's a bunt as they're trying to sacrifice the guy from second to third, and it's right what you would expect to be a third baseman's ball, and it goes right between him and Kyle Finnegan, and he's looking at Finnegan, and Finnegan's looking at him, and I think that showed up. And then yesterday, even though they get the win, there's a spot where C.J. Abrams is on second base with two outs and James Woods at the plate, and he gets picked off. And it's just unacceptable, youthful sort of mistakes like that that are, you know, they're not a good baseball team by any means, just looking at the roster compared to going against the Phillies. So losing 3 out of 4 is, you know, kind of whatever. But when you lose and you have certain mistakes like that, those are the things that they're going to have to work on down the stretch here as they get ready for next year.
How about that James Wood rocket, though? I think that was yesterday. Yeah. I mean, he just continues to impress.
Yeah, it's funny. So Foolish Baseball put out this tweet yesterday saying that James Wood had yet to pull a ball in the air. He'd had 699 pitches he'd faced, and he'd never pulled one in the air. And what do you know? On Sunday, he finally pulls the ball in the air, and it went a mile, 417 feet off the face into the second deck. Like you said, he just continues to impress. He's someone that he's got a slow heartbeat. It's been really cool to watch him, and obviously being the local kid and the local angle is really cool as well. But he's done a heck of a job early on, and I think he's just going to continue to get better. It seems like it just takes him a little bit to adjust, and once he starts getting more and more comfortable, I think you're going to see more of that star shine.
What's our cruise timeline looking like? We still going to see him in the majors? Like, we all talk about September. It's now.
It's close.
It's officially a lost season. I mean, they're 13 games under 500, 17 and a half out in the wild card. Like, it ain't happening. You think we get to see him?
Yeah, I think you'll see him. I don't know exactly when. Last night on our podcast, Bustin' Loose Baseball, Grant had thrown out maybe the Yankees series, which comes up next week. So maybe there's a chance it's then. I would bet that it's a little bit later than that, but I would think before the middle of September, so maybe the first or second week of September, at some point you'll see him just to get his feet wet in the big leagues. But I think you'll see him. It's not like he hasn't been dominating, which is usually what you'd like to see a guy do. That's kind of what James Wood was doing at AAA, and then he eventually got called up. You haven't really seen him dominate at any point in the big leagues, whether it's been AA or AAA, but he's kind of been steady Eddie. So I think calling him up, you know, they skipped him going from A ball to high A. They went straight from A to double A because, you know, basically they said they're not worried about his mentality being hurt if he struggles. I think you can say the same thing for here. If he comes up and has a Jackson Holliday-like stint in the bigs, I don't think it's going to hurt his psyche. So I think at some point you got to call him up, and I'm hoping it's maybe early September.
So I'm looking right now, and just you're not calling him up without getting a home game pop, right?
Yeah.
And so they have the series against the Rockies, then they're on the road in Atlanta, then the Yanks come here. The marketing business side of me wouldn't need to do it against the Yanks because that's going to sell out, and it's Labor Day weekend. People might be out of town, whatever. The last six games of the year are all home games. I mean, maybe you call them up against – kind of that Marlins series or something. I'll be very curious when they do it. Like September 10th and 11th is, I think, a Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, you could get them Tuesday night against the Braves, and then you'd build some real excitement for that series, which is, you know, Braves and Marlins, which maybe not a lot of people would come to. Does that kind of sound about right? Mid-September?
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, around the timeline you're looking at, because to your point, I mean, you're looking at, if you're not doing the Yankee series, then you've got a Cubs series right at the end of August leading into September, which I think would be cool because they'll go on the road to Pittsburgh during the next road series, and that'd be cool if you match up Skeens and Dylan Cruz in the big leagues at some point during that series. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, if they're not calling up next week when they've got six home games, and maybe you're looking at September 10th, like you said, that Tuesday against Atlanta. I mean, you're dead on. It's going to be at home. They're not going to call him up on the road. So, I mean, hopefully it's sooner rather than later. But, I mean, heck, we thought that James Wood had a chance at the opening day roster. We thought he had a chance coming up, you know, 1 or 2 weeks into the season, and it took a while. It took all the way to July 1st to get him here. So, who knows at this point?
All right. B and I were talking about this.
This is why we really called you.
Yeah, this is actually why we really called you. And this one even because we have to shoehorn this sponsored baseball segment in somewhere. Skeens, what are they doing with the Pirates? Maybe you're shutting them down, but because the rules have all changed. Like, if you're going to call them up, do you lose a year of service? Help us understand.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're going to shut him down from what I heard. It sounds like they're going to let him keep going. Yeah, I mean, he's been spectacular. I think he could very well run Rookie of the Year, and they're not really in the race anymore. They're 7 games under .500, and I mean, I guess technically they're still in it, but they've got an incredible rotation for years to come. So I think just having him go through the full season now that he's up is going to be valuable experience for him. But he's been really, really good. So I think that, you know, they're going to continue to throw him out there and see what happens. And, I mean, you worry about injury with him, so I understand why, you know, if people would advocate to shut him down. But I also think at some point you got to go through the rigors of a full season. So they're not going to shut him down, but I don't know that they're going to make the postseason either.
They also were talking about that mere fact that the fact that he's not – they're not making the postseason. If they shut him down, it may affect him getting, like, Rookie of the Year first or second team, which would get – if he were to get one of those things, he gets 1 year without playing the whole year, and that gives him that one extra quicker time to get away from there if he had to.
But don't they also get an extra pick if you have a Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, but I don't know – I'm not fully up on that, to be honest. That one's it's a newer rule. I think it's something where you have to be in the big leagues a little earlier than he was to get that pick. I'm not sure that they would qualify for that.
But if you were to get Rookie of the Year, he gets it, though.
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about, B. Mitch, is, yeah, he could end up getting another, I think they call it Super 2, where you get, you know, you one less year of arbitration, you kind of move along a little bit quicker, and so he would hit free agency a little bit quicker. So maybe they would do that because of the fact that, too, you know, with how good he's been, you'd think that there's not going to be anybody pushing him, but Jackson Merrill out in San Diego has been absolutely fantastic. The shortstop turned a center fielder, so he's pushing him already. People are already talking about Merrill should win it over Skeens. So I think it's an interesting debate here, and maybe they're, you know, because they're technically still in the race, they're, what, 7.5 back? I mean, they're not really in it, but they sort of are. Like, maybe you get towards the beginning of September, he makes 2 or 3 more starts, and then you're like, all right, we'll give him 1 or 2 when you shut him down mid-September. But I don't think they're going to stop him right now, at least that's what they've said.
To hell with Merrill. We're a Skeens radio program. Toby, thank you for the time, buddy.
All right, Tobes.
Absolutely.
When we return, Sam Fortier, Washington Post, joins the program. It's time to talk Z baseball. Joining us right now is B. Mitchell Finley, official baseball insider, Toby Altizer. Of course, all our baseball coverage on 106.7 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Check out the savings calculator at T-Mobile.com/switch. Toby, what up, man? How are you?
What's going on, dude? I'm a little disappointed that my name isn't a little more unique like the guys in the last segment.
Those guys had some names,
nah,
dog.
Toby, you don't want some of those names, man.
Those young men had some names.
Some of them I want to avoid. Some of them not so bad.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like – now, I know the Nats got one back yesterday, but it kind of seemed like all the Phillies needed to get right was to play a 4-game series with the Nats. They went up to Philly and kind of got worked in 3 out of those 4 games.
Yeah, it felt like that, JP. It was something where Philly's really been struggling. They faced the Nationals in the first 3 games of that series. It was kind of dominant. It kind of showed you the state of affairs for this baseball team. I don't think they're, you know, super far from contending, but at the same point, you had some youthful mistakes in this series where they're going to have to work out some of those things the rest of this year as they gear up for next season. Like you had, I think it was Friday night, there was a play in the 10th inning where Jose Tena, who was acquired in the Lane Thomas deal, he's a youngster, he's playing third base, and there's a bunt that they're trying to sacrifice the guy from second to third, and it's right what you would expect to be a third baseman's ball, and it goes right between him and Kyle Finnegan, and he's looking at Finnegan, and Finnegan's looking at him, and I think that showed up. And then yesterday, even though they get the win, there's a spot where C.J. Abrams is on second base with 2 outs and James Woods at the plate, and he gets picked off, and it's just unacceptable, youthful sort of mistakes like that that are, you know, they're not a good baseball team by any means, just looking at the roster compared to going against the Phillies. So losing 3 out of 4 is, you know, kind of whatever. But when you lose and you have certain mistakes like that, those are the things that they're going to have to work on down the stretch here as they get ready for next year.
How about that James Wood rocket, though? I think that was yesterday. Yeah. I mean, he just continues to impress.
Yeah, it's funny. So Foolish Baseball put out this tweet yesterday saying that James Wood had yet to pull a ball in the air. He'd had 699 pitches he'd faced, and he'd never pulled one in the air. And what do you know? On Sunday, he finally pulls the ball in the air, and it went a mile, 417 feet off the face into the second deck. Like you said, he just continues to impress. He's someone that he's got a slow heartbeat. It's been really cool to watch him, and obviously being the local kid and the local angle is really cool as well. But he's done a heck of a job early on, and I think he's just going to continue to get better. It seems like it just takes him a little bit to adjust, and once he starts getting more and more comfortable, I think you're going to see more of that star shine.
What's our Cruz timeline looking like? We still going to see him in the majors? Like, we all talk about September. It's now.
It's close.
It's officially a lost season. I mean, they're 13 games under 500, 17 and a half out in the wild card. Like, it ain't happening. You think we get to see him?
Yeah, I think you'll see him. I don't know exactly when. Last night on our podcast, Bustin' Loose Baseball, Grant had thrown out maybe the Yankees series, which comes up next week. So maybe there's a chance then. I would bet that it's a little bit later than that, but I would think before the middle of September, so maybe the first or second week of September, at some point you'll see him just to get his feet wet in the big leagues. But I think you'll see him. It's not like he hasn't been dominating, which is usually what you'd like to see a guy do. That's kind of what James Wood was doing in AAA, and then he eventually got called up. You haven't really seen him dominate at any point in the big leagues, whether it's been AA or AAA, but he's kind of been steady Eddie. So I think calling him up, you know, they skipped him going from A ball to high A. They went straight from A to double A because, you know, basically they said they're not worried about his mentality being hurt if he struggles. I think you can say the same thing for here. If he comes up and has a Jackson Holliday-like stint in the bigs, I don't think it's going to hurt his psyche. So I think at some point you got to call him up, and I'm hoping it's maybe early September.
So I'm looking right now, and just for, you're not calling him up without getting a home game pop, right?
Yeah.
And so they have the series against the Rockies, then they're on the road in Atlanta, then the Yanks come here. Just the marketing business side of me wouldn't need to do it against the Yanks because that's going to sell out, and it's Labor Day weekend. People might be out of town, whatever. The last 6 games of the year are all home games. I mean, maybe you call them up against – kind of that Marlins series or something. I'll be very curious when they do it. Like September 10th and 11th is, I think, a Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, you could get them Tuesday night against the Braves, and then you'd build some real excitement for that series, which is, you know, Braves and Marlins, which maybe not a lot of people would come to. Does that kind of sound about right? Mid-September?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, around the timeline you're looking at, because to your point, I mean, you're looking at, if you're not doing the Yankee series, then you've got a Cubs series right at the end of August leading into September, which I think would be cool because they'll go on the road to Pittsburgh during the next road series, and that'd be cool if you match up Skeens and Dylan Cruz in the big leagues at some point during that series. But, yeah, I mean, outside of that, if they're not calling up next week when they've got 6 home games, and maybe you're looking at September 10th, like you said, that Tuesday against Atlanta, I mean, you're dead on. It's going to be at home. They're not going to call him up on the road. So, I mean, hopefully it's sooner rather than later. But, I mean, heck, we thought that James Wood had a chance at the opening day roster. We thought he had a chance coming up, you know, 1 or 2 weeks into the season, and it took a while. It took all the way to July 1st to get him here. So, who knows at this point?
All right. B and I were talking about this.
This is why we really called you.
Yeah, this is actually why we really called you. And this one even because we have to shoehorn this sponsored baseball segment in somewhere. Skeens, what are they doing with the Pirates? Maybe you're shutting them down, but because the rules have all changed. Like, if you're going to call them up, do you lose a year of service? Help us understand.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're going to shut him down from what I heard. It sounds like they're going to let him keep going. Yeah, I mean, he's been spectacular. I think he could very well run Rookie of the Year, and they're not really in the race anymore. They're 7 games under 500, and I mean, I guess technically they're still in it, but they've got an incredible rotation for years to come. So I think just having him go through the full season now that he's up is going to be valuable experience for him. But he's been really, really good. So I think that, you know, they're going to continue to throw him out there and see what happens. And, I mean, you worry about injury with him, so I understand why, you know, if people would advocate to shut him down. But I also think at some point you got to go through the rigors of a full season. So they're not going to shut him down, but I don't know that they're going to make the postseason either.
They also were talking about that mere fact that the fact that he's not – they're not making the postseason. If they shut him down, it may affect him getting, like, rookie of the year first or second team, which would get – if he were to get one of those things, he gets 1 year without playing the whole year, and that gives him that one extra quicker time to get away from there if he had to.
But don't they also get an extra pick if you have a rookie of the year?
Yeah, but I don't know – I'm not fully up on that, to be honest. That one's it's a newer rule. I think it's something where you have to be in the big leagues a little earlier than he was to get that pick. I'm not sure that they would qualify
for
that.
But if you were to get Rookie of the Year, he gets it, though.
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about, B. Mitch, is, yeah, he could end up getting another, I think they call it Super 2, where you get, you know, you one less year of arbitration, you kind of move along a little bit quicker, and so he would hit free agency a little bit quicker. So maybe they would do that because of the fact that, too, you know, with how good he's been, you'd think that there's not going to be anybody pushing him, but Jackson Merrill out in San Diego has been absolutely fantastic, the shortstop turned a center fielder. So he's pushing him already. People are already talking about Merrill should win it over Skeen. So I think it's going to be interesting to stretch here and maybe get there. You know, because they're technically still in the race, they're, what, 7.5 back? I mean, they're not really in it, but they sort of are. Like, maybe you get toward the beginning of September, he makes two or three more starts, and then you're like, all right, we'll give him one or two when you shut him down mid-September. But I don't think they're going to stop him right now, at least that's what they've said.
To hell with Merrill. We're a Skeens radio program. Toby, thank you for the time, buddy.
All right, Tobes.
Absolutely.
When we return, Sam Fortier, Washington Post, joins the program.